Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
We began a study of some things about leprosy. In Leviticus 13 and in Leviticus 14, we read of the law of the leper, how that it is to be detected and what is to be done when the leper was healed. And in our study this morning, I pointed out how that leprosy is a type of sin. And I think this is indicated in the very fact that the book of Leviticus is a book that has to do with priesthood, sacrifice, and the tabernacle. The tabernacle worship. And in chapter 16, there is a lengthy discussion of the importance of atonement. And so chapters 13 and 14 are just before chapter 16, where there is a discussion of atonement. This morning I pointed out some of the similarities and some things to think about in relationship to what is suggested by leprosy. First of all, Leviticus 13 reminded the one that had any sign of leprosy that it needed immediate attention. And that's true about sin. Sin does not need to be dallied with nor played around with. In the second place, one was not allowed to use his own judgment concerning the matter. He had to go to the priest. And this is true concerning sin. We learned also that the leper, when he was healed, was not cured. There's possibility of it reoccurring. And this is true of sin. I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that this may not be true. And then to be a leper unless it was healed was to be a living death. Paul, in writing to Timothy, talked about the widow that lived in pleasure, said, "She is dead while she liveth." And a person that's living in sin is indeed a living death. He's a walking dead person. Have you ever heard it said of somebody that's truly ill, that as you see them, they look like the walking dead? Indeed, that's what sin is, and that's what every sinner is. They are walking dead people. In Ephesians 2, Paul said that people were dead in their sins and in their trespasses. And that's what sin does. And then sin is repulsive, just as leprosy was repulsive. It might have an insignificant beginning, but there would be continual progress about it. 2 Timothy 3:13, Paul talked about there were those who were guilty of sin, and he said they wax worse and worse. And that's what sin does, and that's the way it works. Well, let me talk some more now about some other ideas that are suggested about leprosy. Leprosy, unless it was dealt with and healed, affected the whole man. It would finally encompass the whole man. And in the same way, sin affects the whole man, the inward man. In 2 Corinthians 4, Paul talked about the outward man and the inward man and said, "Though the outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day." But sin affects the inward man. It affects our affection. It affects our thinking. It affects our will. Listen to what Paul said in Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient." Sin affects the moral judgment. There comes a time when we live in sin and practice sin until it gets to the place where it affects our understanding. As we look out at moral issues of life, we lose the ability to be able to decide what's right and make choices upon what's right. In Isaiah 5, Isaiah said, "There are those that put darkness for light and light for darkness and good for evil and good and evil for good." What happened? They had so played around with sin until their moral sensibilities had become affected and they could not think right. That's what sin does. When we think that we can just sin with impunity and that it will not affect us and that sometime any time down the road, we'll just make a decision, and we'll make the right decision. We're playing with fire. Can you imagine somebody that had leprosy that would say, well, I won't be bothered about it, but I'll just let it go on, and somewhere down the road I'll decide that I'm going to do something about it, and then I'll go to the doctor or try to get it healed. You couldn't think of somebody having leprosy thinking that way. And yet how often that's the way that we think about sin, because it affects our ability to think and to understand and to perceive. Jesus said, when he gave the parable of the sower in Matthew 13, there are those who seeing cannot see, cannot perceive, and hearing cannot hear. And then he said, I can't convert them. They can't understand. They have destroyed their ability to understand by the resistance of truth, the insistence on following their own way and living their own lives and ignoring God's will, until finally they cannot see the truth whenever it's presented. Have you ever said, I'm so upset that I can't see straight? We can become so involved in things that we can't think about it objectively. We think about it only from an emotional standpoint. And when our emotions become involved, our intellect set over on the side. We don't think right. And therefore, the danger of allowing sin to continue in our lives. I remember Brother Nichols telling about a man that made charts for him. And through making the charts for Brother Nichols, he learned the truth. And through some means, and this is years ago, he had become addicted to some kind of drug. But when he learned the truth, he was determined that he was going to get off of it. And I remember hearing Brother Nichols tell about how he'd shut himself up in a room and the tremendous problem that he had. But he realized he couldn't go on that way, that there had to come to break. And he made it. And the same thing is true about sin. Sin can so involve our mental faculties until we don't think like we ought to think. Sin doesn't become sin. I can't think of anything any more tragic in life than to live in such a way until my moral sensibilities become so enveloped by sin and perverted by sin, and the conscience becomes seared. And I can't give sin a serious consideration. I can't discern between what's sin and what's not. And I've lived for my own will so long until that's what happened. And so, in verse 31, he says, without understanding. And so in verse 28, he said that God would give them over to a reprobate mind. The margin said, a mind void of judgment. They can't make the proper decision. Then verse 31 said, without understanding. Can you think of anything any more tragic than to come to the place where when you read the Bible, you couldn't understand it? Isn't that sad? God forbid that I'd ever allow sin to lay hold of my life and envelop my understanding and my mind until when I came to read the Bible, I couldn't understand what God's trying to tell me. No wonder Paul said God gave them up. There comes a time when people insist on allowing sin to dominate their lives until God turns them loose and lets them go. As a judgment upon their rebelling against God and determining they're going to have their own way. We cannot live our own lives and ignore what the Bible said and live in sin without it coming to affect us. But then again, another characteristic of leprosy was that whenever it developed, it made the place insensible, without feeling. According to what I can read concerning it then, the spots that were affected didn't have any feeling in them. I remember we used to let our cattle go out on the range. There wasn't any cattle law at that time. When spring came, we'd have some cows and yearlings, and we'd take them back in the mountains, have a bell cow so we could keep up with them and just turn them loose and let them go. But before we did, we'd brand them, and we had a little old C made out of a piece of iron. We'd put that in a piece of fire, heat it till it got red hot, and then put it right on the hip of the cow or the yearling, and that'd be a C. Where that is burned, it destroyed the feeling. And that's what leprosy would do. Where leprosy was found, that place didn't have any feeling. But did you know that the Bible talks about that happening? In Ephesians 4 and 19, Paul talked about people coming to the place where they are past feeling. Their sensibilities cannot be touched. Sin hardens. And I finally get to the place where my conscience cannot be pricked. Having done wrong and having sinned, I cannot be brought to penitence. And that's also tragic. But we learn from leprosy that's one of the consequences of sin. But again, leprosy was incurable. Man could not cure it. There are some verses in the 7th chapter of the book of Romans that tell us some things about sin. Listen to what Paul says in verse 19 of Romans 7. For the good that I would do, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do. Think about being in a situation like that. Now if I do that I would not, it's no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. I find then a law that when I would do good, evil is present with me. For I delight in the law of God after the inward man. But I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, bringing me into captivity the law of sin which is in my members. And so we find ourselves in the bondage of sin. What about it then? Is there any way out? When I have done wrong and when I am faced with weaknesses and frailties in my life and find myself captured by the things that affect us, is there anything that can be done? Must I live that way? Am I hopeless? And am I to say, well, this is the way I am and there's not anything I can do about it, and leave it there? If I had stopped reading at the last verse which I read, that's what would be the case. But that's not where it ends. Listen to what he said. Oh, wretched man that I am. There's a condition. Who shall deliver me from this body of death? Is there any way out? Unless I have destroyed my ability to discern between right and wrong? As long as there is within me the ability to make moral decisions based upon truth and right, is there any hope? Oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of death? And listen to Paul. I thank God through Jesus Christ. Yes, there's a way out. We don't have to allow sin to dominate us and control us. God has arranged through His Son, wherever the conscience can be tender, the moral sensibility is subject to what's right and delight and truth and understanding, then there's hope. There's a way out. Decisions can be made under the inspiration of the gospel of Christ and in the power and the influence that's found in it. We don't have to give in. We don't have to give up. Unless we decide that that's the way that we want to act and that's what we want to do. But then again, there's another thing about leprosy that is tragic. The leper had to cry out, unclean, unclean. Then he shut out the camp. If you'll read number 12, when Miriam was guilty of sin and was stricken with leprosy, Moses prayed for her. But God said, let her follow the law of the leper. She's got to stay out of the camp. She's unclean. Wasn't fit for fellowship with God's people and separated from God's people because of the contagion of leprosy. Could not have fellowship with God in the camp. Let me turn and read from the last book of the Bible. Listen to what Revelation 21 and 27 says. And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's book of life. And so when there was one that was guilty of leper, they was quarantined. They were separated because of the contagion of it. Whenever there are physical diseases that people have today and there's a danger of their infesting other people, we know what quarantine is. And back before they had vaccination and when somebody had smallpox, then you'd be quarantined. You couldn't have visitors. You had to stay separated, lest somebody else become infested with smallpox. And I suppose if somebody had a case of smallpox today, they'd still be quarantined. Think about how interested we are in isolating ourselves from physical diseases. Think of the concern in the minds of people today about AIDS. There are those that don't even doctor because they're afraid of the contagion. There are hospitals that they don't want to have anything to do with. They're afraid to do anything with it. Isn't it sad that we don't have that attitude towards sin? That we're not that afraid of the contagion of sin? Isn't it sad that we'd be concerned about quarantining our children and would not want them to be where they would contact some disease, smallpox, or whatever it might be? But whenever it comes to the contagion of sin, we're not careful about seeing that they're quarantined and kept away from, that they may avoid it. But which is more tragic? Smallpox, a physical malady, or sin that destroys and dooms and damns, that separates from God and separates from the holy? Where is our concern? We need to think carefully about the matter. And therefore, the idea of leprosy being contagious, sin is contagious, and we need to have it quarantined. We need to avoid placing ourselves deliberately in the place of it. And then the case of the leper turned upon what the priest said in Leviticus 13, verses 2 and 3. I already mentioned the fact that the priest determined who the leper was. If the leper said he is clean, he's clean. If the leper said that he had leprosy, then that is true. And if the priest said that he was unclean, then he is unclean. And so it does not matter then what men might say. There might be somebody that might tell me that I'm all right. That's not the question. The question is, what does the high priest say? My parents might even say, well, you're all right. That's not the question. The parents of the one that was a leper did not decide the case. He had to go to the high priest. And only when the high priest announced him, pronounced him unclean, was he unclean or clean? Was he clean? He wasn't left to decide for himself. He couldn't look at it and say, well, I believe that's just about healed up, and I believe that's all right. No, that's not the way it was done. It was determined on the basis of what the high priest said. And therefore, the verdict of our case will be based upon what the high priest said. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verse 21 to 23, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Now mark it. There'll be those who will be saying, we decided the case and we're all right. They'll say, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in thy name and in thy name do many wonderful works? Yes, that's what they said. They were declaring their case was all well. But the priests would say, not so. Depart from me, you workers of iniquity, for I never knew you. And therefore, we must come to the high priest to recognize what our case is and let him determine it and settle it. That's the only way to handle sin. What does Jesus say about it? What does he say is the remedy for it? What does he say how it's to be handled? And have I followed the direction that was given by the priest? But then again, one final thought in connection with it. In the 17th chapter of the book of Luke, we have an account that we'll soon be studying in our Sunday morning lesson, but I just want to refer to it briefly to make a point tonight as we bring our study to a close. In verse 11 of Luke 17, I read, and it came to pass, as he went to Jerusalem, that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered into a certain village, there met him 10 men that were lepers, which stood afar off. Look at that. Separated. Stood afar off. They lifted up their voices and said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said unto them, go show yourself to the priest. I see that's based on Leviticus 13, which I read a while ago in Leviticus 13, 14. And it came to pass, as they went, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, and with a loud voice glorified God, fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks, and he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answered and said, were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? Thou art not found that return to give glory to God, save the stranger. And he saith unto them, rise and go thy way, thy faith has made thee whole. Think about all the consequences of leprosy that I've described this morning and tonight. The tragedy of it. The living dead. Separated. And when you came close to somebody to have to cry out, unclean, unclean. And unless it was healed, a part of the body, part by part, would drop off. A living death. Can you think of that? Living, and as you look at yourself, you can see yourself just dying, and you know it's there. Now then, with that in mind, a leper's healed. Here were 10 of them. All 10 of them were healed. What happened? 9 out of 10 were not thankful. Only one could look at what had taken place and offer thankfulness and gratitude to God. What about sin? When sin would destroy my very life, separating me from God, facing an eternal world without God and without hope. Living and finding nothing to look forward to in all this life. Only the fearful thought of standing before God in judgment. To hear the announcement, you're lost. No hope. Think about that. Yet God sent His Son into the world and let Him live among men in order that the leprosy of sin might be cured. Gave His life, shed His blood, that the foul disease of sin could be washed away from my soul, leaving me pure and clean, blameless before God, fit to be in fellowship with a holy God. And then am I thankful? Or am I like the nine? I thank God owes that to me. And I haven't paused to demonstrate my gratitude and thankfulness to God. You think about some that were here this morning. Where are they tonight? Are they like the nine? Would they want to really live without having any the hope that God has provided through His Son? I know there are some physically unable to be here, and I'm talking about that. I'm talking about those who just deliberately, willfully, lack of interest, fail to return tonight. Are they like the nine? Lacking in gratitude? A failure to be thankful? I don't think it's any wonder that when Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper, He took the bread and gave thanks, and took the fruit of the vine and gave thanks. God knew how easy it is for me to forget to be grateful. And therefore, on every first day of the week, He's set the table so that as I looked at that bread and broke that bread, that it would create anew within me a feeling of thanksgiving and of gratitude and appreciation for what He's done. But as I drink the fruit of the vine, it'll create again within me a deeper appreciation and gratitude for what He's done, that sin might be dealt with. Is that what went through your mind this morning as you broke the bread and as you drank the fruit of the vine? Did there well up within your very bosom gratefulness to God? That out of His love and concern, when the leprosy of sin was eating the very vitals of your life away and separating you from God forever, that He opened the door and made it possible for that disease to be healed, your sin forgiven. I hope that as we think about this subject, let me encourage you to read again Leviticus 13 and 14, because we need to be reminded over and over again of the serious nature of sin. If you're here tonight and your life is stained with sin, or you're conscious of it, or you're examining your heart and your life, or you're thinking with me tonight, are you putting out of your mind? Ignore it. Don't do that. Don't let it destroy your ability to make moral decisions. Don't lose your sensibility, tender conscience, when you come short of the glory of God. It'll cost you your soul. If out of Christ and you need to obey the gospel through faith, penitence, and confession your faith in Christ as the Son of God and being baptized for remission of your sin, or you've drifted back into the world and brought shame and reproach upon the church, then through prayer and confession and penitence, that you might be restored to your fellowship with a heart that's grateful